Welcome to CPA Practice Advisors Tech to Go podcast series, a fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Darren Root and regular columnists. These thought leaders tackle issues impacting the tax and accounting profession.
Hi, this is Darren Root, executive editor of CPA Practice Advisor, coming to you with episode 61 of Tech to Go. I'm here with my regular co-host, Randy Johnston, today. Randy's a principal with K2 Enterprises, as well as Network Management Group, Inc. So welcome today, Randy.
Good day, Darren, and welcome to all our listeners.
Well, Randy, you and I spent a bit talking before we got started, and I guess what I'd like for you to do is share a little bit of what you're seeing out in the profession right now as you're out and about talking to accounting firms.
Well, we've had the good pleasure of being in about a dozen firms or so over the last so many weeks, actually a few more than that. So, concerns continue to be in place. How do we integrate these new SaaS-oriented services? How do we get ourselves to the cloud? Should we stay in-house? And, you know, some of those answers still are varying all over the map. So the words that I've been using now are, we can keep everything on premises and create a private cloud. We can go to a hosting company, or we can try to look for more of a SaaS operation. But reality is we're going to mix a bunch of our applications together in a hybrid solution. So, you know, as firms are trying to figure out new ways to develop, additional client services or better client services, they continue to work through a lot of those issues. That may be the number one hot spot in every one of the firms that I've been in over the last 8 or 10 weeks.
Yeah, I think I have to agree that you're right on target with that. And I don't see that there's a clear path, a clear answer right now. It's a bit on a case-by-case basis, don't you think?
It is so much on a case-by-case basis. I try to go in when I'm doing the consulting work in the firms without a supposed notion or a solution determined. And as I listen to what the firms desire to do, the outcome in so many of the cases is so different than maybe even what I would have suspected from the pre-visit documentation. There is no magic bullet here. There is no clear path. There's some things that you can do to position your firm better, but if somebody comes in saying, we've got a turnkey answer for you and we can do it all, I'd be pretty pessimistic about that approach right now. There's a few ways to get it done fairly easily, but boy, none of them are easy.
But I think you're right. This is top of mind for every proactive firm that I'm talking to. They're trying they're wrestling with these decisions right now.
Mm-hmm. They are. You know, and if you look at the big boys' offerings, their hosted solutions, which they really call SaaS, but they're really hosted with Virtual Office CS or the CCH next-gen product, you know, that's one part of the solution, but it doesn't take everything. If you get down to, you know, something as simple as client bookkeeping, we've been on this path of Intuit hosted authorized QuickBooks companies or self-hosting, which you and I pursued at some length, together trying to figure out, can this really financially fly? And I noticed about 30 days ago, Intuit authorized about an additional 8 hosting companies, doubling the number from about 8 to about 16. And each of these guys are just solving one little part of the problem, getting a QuickBooks file and maybe a few third-party products hosted. That gets collaborative accounting done with your client, but it doesn't integrate it into the rest of your operation very well.
You're absolutely right. I had a nice conversation with Brad Smith, CEO of Intuit, last week when I was in Palo Alto, and I asked Brad, I sort of stated it in, you know, QuickBooks Online has been out for a good while. It's met with mixed reviews over the years. He didn't disagree with that. But it's certainly headed down a path right now. They're full speed ahead on development of QuickBooks Online. They see that as a big part of their future. So I followed up with that with, you know, we're in this transitional state. which, I mean, I don't know if the transitional state is 2 years or 15 years right now for QuickBooks desktop hosted. And so I ask them, you know, why is it that Intuit chose to go with the authorized hosting providers instead of doing this themselves? And, you know, Brad articulated to me that it's just as important for him and Intuit to figure out what it is that they don't do as it is, you know, to figure out what it is that they do do. And what they decided was they didn't want to divert their investment of engineering time to hosting when that would pull away from the QuickBooks online development, which is where they believe their end game will be. Does that make sense?
That's an insightful response, as it turns out. And on the other side of the coin, as you know, one of the additional authors on the CPA Practice Advisor team is Doug Sleater, who obviously has a deep QuickBooks reputation, deservedly so. And I had the opportunity to be on the road with Doug over the last 3 weeks or so. And in the process, wound up stranded at the airport with Kevin Kern, who is one of the product managers for Intuit Online. It was a great opportunity. I mean, you get a delay of 4 or 5 hours on an airplane, and you just sit and chat. And I was so impressed with Kevin's desire and ability to listen. And he described to me how Intuit's QuickBooks Online managers read every piece of written feedback that anybody puts in on the product, and they discuss it among themselves, even to the tune of, we know you're not going to read this piece of feedback, but I'm going to say this anyway. And so when they're so focused on trying to improve the product experience, I think they're making pretty doggone good progress. Really, for clients that don't have inventory needs, you can do a lot of things in QuickBooks Online that you can't doing QuickBooks Desktop right now, and the pricing model and the, you know, lots of other factors, it's starting to turn around to the tune now that, you know, Intuit reports more than 300,000 users on the QuickBooks Online platform. Yeah, they still have a long way to go on closing the gap to QuickBooks Desktop, but that's a far cry from where they were a year ago.
So I spent a couple hours with Kevin when I was in Palo Alto, and I would agree, very focused, very sharp young man, and a great team dedicated to making QuickBooks Online better. Well, with that said, Randy, one of the topics that we wanted to talk about today was this whole entry-level accounting software. It seems to be heating up, and it's all happening in the clouds. Kind of lay the groundwork for our listeners as to what's going on in this space right now.
Well, we followed accounting software from many computers down into PCs across networks. So I've been following this for 30-plus years. There frankly weren't very many products developed over the last decade, but most of the online accounting products, the SaaS products, the ones that run in a browser, are multi-user, multi-tenant. Got their designs in the late 90s that are high-profile names today. So the mid-market products like NetSuite or Intact or Financial Force or SAP's Business by Design, all those have got quite a bit of age on them, some of them 10 or 12 years, others 5 years or so. In the last 18 months in specific, we've seen new products developed that are really entry-level accounting software products. So if we look at Intuit QuickBooks Online Heritage, it was really developed in the late 90s and released in 2001. But we've seen other products coming to market or getting to market, products like Wave or products like Xero, which were developed over about the last five-year time period or so. Now, to help our listeners get a little bit of sense of this, Brian Tankersley, also another writer on our CPA Practice Advisor team, and I have been keeping track of these products as we discover them, and we've been monitoring and found 23 products, but over the last 2 weeks, I've found two more, so I'm now up to 25 new products that have been written and that I have personally seen over the last 18 months or so. Now, not all those products are to market. Some of those products I've seen under non-disclosure. But if you think about 25 brand new entry-level accounting software products coming to market, that's a huge wave change. And some of the products that I've looked at, the comprehensiveness, the thoughtfulness, the way the journals, the reporting, the payroll, and so forth features work, they're just pretty bloody impressive. So for our listeners, probably the most high-profile one by name on the entry-level side right now is the company coming out of New Zealand, Xero. Xero has been building their product since 2005. They have been building it based on a collaborative model with the accounting firm being centric to this model. And they've made it, you know, multi-currency and all those things right off the bat, and have been working on bringing that here into the United States. So that's just one example of the 25 or so now that we've seen.
So right now, you know, most accounting firms that I talk to, and I would suggest that most in America at this point, you know, Brad Smith articulated that Intuit owns 91-92% of the market space, the small business accounting market space. So most firms are dealing with a QuickBooks desktop siloed sort of approach to their bookkeeping, whether it's their write-up practice where they're getting QuickBooks backup files, or they're doing bookkeeping for a client and they have QuickBooks on their machine. So they're working in this very siloed approach right now. How long do you think, I mean, what do you see on the horizon for those firms and how they should be thinking maybe differently right now?
Well, to quote my host, is that 2 or 15 years? I'm not quite sure on that. You know, if you put me on the spot, though, which is the right thing to do here because our listeners have the same issue to struggle through, I'm going to suggest this desktop model of accounting is coming to a close. I think the window is probably less than 5 years. And, you know, maybe in the long haul it winds up being 7. For some people, maybe it's a little shorter. But what really is the tipping point is when there's enough features inside the online products that they're at least close in the feature set, because performance-wise, they're going to be pretty close to start with. So, you know, I have to cite maybe another product that I think you know somewhat about, or maybe you're more familiar with it, MySys, the manufacturing product. Mm-hmm. You know, these guys had written a traditional desktop products, and about 5 years ago, they created their small business manufacturing class product, really intended to be a lot more SaaSable and so forth. And, you know, over time, they've been adding more and more features into their small business manufacturing where they can leave their legacy code behind. Well, I don't think we'll see that with QuickBooks Online necessarily, because some of the features that were added, you know, are not used by enough people that it makes sense for Intuit to put those in there. And I think the same will be true in Xero's model or Wave's model or these others that we're talking about. So to me, it's a matter of the core accounting system getting strong enough, and then the third-party infrastructure supporting products to be added to get a complete solution. And today, I think you can do that with QuickBooks Online and many of the third-party products. So that means we're at the beginning of the wave of a complete online solution being possible.
Another thing, well, one of the things that Kevin and Brad both articulated at Intuit were that they're on a 6-week development cycle right now. So every 6 weeks, they're releasing new features into QBO. So that's a pretty rapid enhancement process, don't you think?
It is a very rapid, but it's not out of the ordinary. Some of these SaaS, small SaaS vendors are releasing product cycles as quick as 4 weeks, some as long as 8 weeks. So notice the range is 4 to 8. So 6 is kind of in the middle. And when you look at specialty features, let's just say the accountant's features of QuickBooks Online, you can tinker with those and, you know, get them to market and get feedback fairly quickly when you're doing these short cycles. The projects are much easier to manage, and you can focus on one thing in the short period. So we watched that happen with Intacct over the last 2 years. We're watching it happen with Xero right now. And, you know, when you think back about over the recent past, you know, Xero has gotten to market with their ADP payroll relationship announced. So, you know, they've positioned themselves saying, look, we're not going to write payroll. We're going to use ADP's version, and we're going to use ADP's sales team to drive our national efforts. Well, I've heard a number, but I'd sure like to verify it. But ADP has thousands of field salespeople to drive this payroll service and to pull it through with a small business accounting product. So, you know, when you think about Intuit's position on this, who markets QuickBooks Online and how do we get that done, right? So that becomes much more of an issue for Intuit with Xero now getting this additional marketing muscle.
Absolutely. So back to sort of my question. We don't know how long the shelf life is for desktop software, but I think the writing's on the wall, and you mentioned that it is somewhere between maybe 5 and 7, or maybe longer, maybe shorter. Mm-hmm. With that in mind, your managing partner, or you're running an accounting division of a small accounting firm or even a large accounting firm, what do you tell that professional in the firm what they should be thinking about right now? Should they be dabbling their feet, sticking their toe in the water in QBO and Wave and Xero, starting to figure out how they can build a model? What do you think their next step is?
I think it is absolutely time to look at these software as a service products. You know, a popular one to get this done, obviously promoted by CPA to Biz. You and I both use it, and we've talked about it many times, Bill.com. Obviously, Renee used to sit on these calls with us frequently. But I think the online accounting model, I believe you can look at your client base today, look at the solutions that are out there, and actually build a workable model right now. And if that model is working, that, I think, sets the tone for what you might do with the rest of your firm. See, this five-year window, the reason I'm using 5 years is because a lot of firms came off of the recession, 2008, 9, 10, maybe as late as 11, and they made a lot of equipment purchases to rebuild their infrastructures internally. Most servers have a five-year life, and I think even right now when you make the decision about do I keep things in-house or on-premise, or do I take them hosted, or do I try to get all SaaS? I think you have to have enough vision of what you're going to do with your tax product, how you're going to do your comps and reviews, any other specialty services that you have. How do I get that solved? And can I run it in the cloud? Can I run it in a hosted center? Or do I really need to keep it on-premise because of the way that I integrate things? And the tipping point is going to be when enough things can be run in the cloud effectively, and the cost structures are such that it makes sense to stay in the cloud, then that's when we'll see a pretty mass migration. But trying to get back onto the core topic of the online accounting software, I'm going to bet that right now in our listener base that 25, 30, maybe even 50% of your clients could run out of one of the online accounting software products that is in the market today, and if the others make it to market, as I think they will, I'm going to tell you that it's going to be 70 or 75% of your clients could run from the online accounting products today.
So if I'm a listener out there, I'm wondering, why do I care about this? I mean, QuickBooks Desktop is a perfectly fine product. My client likes it, and they're using it. Why do I care? Well, I guess I'll put my spin on it first, Randy. The reason that firms should care is because there's real efficiencies once the accounting firm and the client can start collaborating, once that the accountant can have access to data in real time. there's real efficiencies to be gained there, controlling that data, being that support mechanism for their client. And that's the reason we're talking about this. That's the reason you and I talk about hosted QuickBooks, is so we can get it out in a collaborative environment. So the next step to that is more of a SaaS play. Am I hitting that right?
You are. So the efficiencies really help in terms of just client interaction, but I believe that it drives out a lot of soft costs. We understand the hard costs of hardware dollars and software dollars, but we don't do a very good job of managing how much time we squander by transferring files and keeping data files in sync and worrying about a USB drive copy of where a QuickBooks file is at and some of those type of issues. Anywhere, anytime access, plus the new capabilities in the web browsers, and further, the ability to look at these things on our tablets or our phones when it makes sense, gives us the ability to answer a client's question in a setting where we normally would say, let me get back to you on that, let me get to a computer. We're going to find a whole lot more of these mobilized apps that are possible because of the SaaS solutions.
I think you're right on point there, Randy. In the time we have left, we should talk about Windows 8. As a release date of August 16th, which is maybe after our listeners or before our listeners listen to this podcast. So tell us what we ought to be thinking about related to Windows 8.
Well, three or four things, but you're spot on. The release to manufacturing date is set as August 16th. The actual sale date is set as October 26th. So what this does for us is tells us about the timing of some new hardware that will ship to the marketplace, including Microsoft's Surface product, which will ship on October 26th. We'll have this new Tile Affair, formerly known as Metro, but Microsoft lost the rights to use the Metro name, so they'll have to cook up a new one before release. But the Windows 8 experience, along with the Office 2013 experience, the navigation is quite different. We are not suggesting that people just jump on board and try to use Windows 8 without training or orientation, because I think it will be disruptive to productivity and so forth. So timing-wise, then, if you're going to try to hold on to the legacy approaches of the Microsoft world, think Windows 7, whether that's Enterprise Edition or Ultimate, so you can get encryption, and Office 2010, you're going to have to act fairly soon to be able to hold the old style of doing things. The Windows 8 style, which will be in the desktop, on their portable computers and their phones, is a new way of navigating Windows, and that is also inherited in Office 2013. So if you're thinking, you know, I'm going to need new computers before the end of the year, my suggestion is you probably should do your legwork on your computer purchases before you entered the extended tax deadlines of September and October 15th, and be ready to make your decisions in that October 15th to 26th time frame. Why such a short window, and why not wait for the new hardware? Well, that's a strategic decision you should ponder, because I can absolutely buy off on waiting and buying the new hardware after October 26th, but we also believe that Microsoft will have new license pricing and new license strategy to go along with the Windows 8 announcement. And we don't think that number is going to be less money to most firms. Number two, we don't think the core applications that we're using are going to be compatible or very compatible for this coming tax season with the new Windows 8 and Office 2013 technologies. So that tells me we want to hang back a little bit right now, and if you wait till after October 26th, you're going to be more forced into taking Windows 8 than if you make your purchases before October 26th. So you can see we're shuffling around several bits of dice, I think, on this, trying to position them with you, Darren. But I think your buying window is pretty short if you want to make your changes after the October 15th deadline.
Well, now you've got me pondering, Randy. I'm sitting here thinking, do I have, I mean, that's, you bring up so many good points. You know, do I have machines in my office that before the end of the year I want to probably upgrade? And if the answer to that is yes, do I really want to disrupt and take the risk of things not working well with Windows 8? Or do I want to go ahead and say, okay, I'm good with Windows 7 for the next year or two, so I'm comfortable going ahead and buying the PCs that I need? Is that, am I thinking about that right?
You are thinking about that right. And see, we think there's some beautiful new features in Windows 8 and Office 2013 for mail configuration and the way SkyDrive is used for synchronization of files and the integration into Office 365. There's a lot of very charming pieces. But a user like you, Darren, who's running a virtual machine on a, you know, Mac Air or a Mac Pro, that Windows 8 virtual machine out there, that's going to be pretty disruptive, and I wouldn't plan on it working with any of the major tax products very well.
All right.
And there's going to be things that you just don't think anything about today, like selecting a printer, and that's going to be kind of different. Or launching an
application. Does my scanner work? You know, is there a scanner driver?
Blah, 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 blah. And in fact, there's so many of those blah, 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 blahs that I think the risk of going to Windows 8 for most public practice firms is pretty high, and the reward is fairly low. So unusual for me, as often as I recommend new technology and transitioning to new technology, maybe earlier than you should go, notice the caution that I'm thinking it's not a very good idea to move. And so the real problem is if you make your purchases after October 26th, you're going to get some new generation hardware. Some of that's really great. The problem is the manufacturer may be forced to lock you into Windows 8 on the purchase, and you don't want that. So now you're going to have to go buy open licensing to downgrade the equipment, and you may have some issues with getting Windows 7 supported properly on the new generation hardware.
I think that's some very good advice, Randy. I appreciate that. On a different note, I hopped on the App Store in Apple last week, downloaded Mountain Lion for my MacBook Pro, the new Retina display unit that I bought about a month ago, which I'm thoroughly pleased with. And you talk about a smooth process, no hiccups, great enhancement. Have you tried that yet?
I have, and most everybody that I've talked to on the Mountain Lion conversion is equally happy. I know on my older generation Mac Air, it came across just beautifully.
Yeah. You know, there's some features in there that I really like. You know, they've taken the Safari browser bar where we would normally put our web address in, and they've converged essentially Google search and web browser address in the same bar. So you don't have a separate bar for that. And that's one interesting enhancement. Another is the converging of iMessage. So think I'm on an iPhone and I text my wife who's also on an iPhone. Now I was flying actually, Randy, last week back from Palo Alto. So I'm in the air. I've got my MacBook Pro open. And I'm texting my wife using iChat from my laptop as opposed to having to be on my mobile device. That's a pretty slick feature. So there's this convergence of various devices, iPad, or iPhone, and laptop all together, you know, which is pretty cool.
It's very cool. In fact, if our listeners will go back to our histories and listen to the podcast on platforms, and you know, obviously I've written some columns on platforms as well, what you just described is exactly what we're talking about. A solid platform for the Mac plus iPads plus iPhones, and we're going to see the same thing with Windows 8, this platform experience.
Randy, are you still on there?
I am still with you.
I used technology and just got dropped. So, sorry about that. Had to call back in. I didn't hear your whole explanation about my question on Windows 8, but I'm sure it was a really good one.
Well, I think it may have gotten cut off, but just to repeat it in case it wasn't recorded properly, it's a platform. And so if you think about the prior podcast that we've recorded on this or the writing that we've done in this area, this experience that you're describing is what we were talking about in that platform available from Apple with Mountain Lion and the iOS, and you'll see some iOS upgrades very shortly that make that, all of those things even better, including, you know, the iPhone 5 upgrade and those pieces that are coming. We're going to see the same doggone thing happen with Windows in Windows 8 with the desktops and the tablets and their phones. And we're going to see the same thing with the Android platform. So, you know, I've got to tell you, I have the new Google Nexus 7, which I've been using. I like it so much better than I do the iPad. And I know how much you like your iPad.
Absolutely.
I am just floored with how good the Nexus 7 is and that whole experience. And so these platforms really become big strategic things for us. So, you know, our listeners may want to go back and listen to platforms one more time or read about those, because it's still a great big deal.
Well, the good thing is it's good for the consumer, because that's that that blended, unified experience that that we're getting out of these platforms that really enhances the user experience.
Very much so. And so now from a practitioner perspective, if we start thinking about the end-user experience improving so much, their expectation of our services is rising dramatically, sometimes unrealistic expectations, I'm thinking. But hopefully, as we try to help our users navigate, we're getting new experiences that are better for the clients, profitable for the firms, and all around everybody wins.
Well, Randy, we're out of time today. Really appreciate your input, some great insights, particularly on the entry-level accounting and the Windows 8 decision-making that needs to take place this year. So thanks so much. I hope you have a great rest of the month of August, and also the same to our listeners. So thanks, Randy.
All right. We'll talk again soon and keep you up to date as we can, and I look forward to going back and forth with you on other topics.
Great. Thanks so much.
For more info on the CPA Practice Advisor programs and our e-newsletter, visit cpapracticeadvisor.com. To ask questions or leave comments about our podcasts, call 1-800-456-0864, extension 2107, or tune into future episodes where you'll be able to ask questions live via TalkShoe.com.